BBC Radio 3.
You're listening to BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. The time is 1 o'clock. Time for the news with Vaughan Savage.
David Cameron has dismissed criticism of the government's economic strategy and insisted that it's firing up the engines of the British economy. Speaking in Manchester on the opening day of the Conservative conference, the Prime Minister promised increased discounts to help council tenants buy their homes. When the Tories introduced the original right-to-buy scheme in the 1980s, they were criticised for reducing the stock of social housing. But under the new proposals, a new home would be built for each one sold. Greater Manchester Police say 1,000 officers have been deployed in the city ahead of a mass protest organised by the TUC. It's expected that 30,000 people will march through parts of Manchester and nearby Salford. Conditions in the Libyan city of Sirte, one of the last remaining strongholds of forces loyal to Colonel Gaddafi, have been described as dire by the Red Cross. Doctors at a hospital say hundreds of injured people need treatment, but there is no power or water. Afghan officials have said that the killer of the former president and peace envoy, Burhanuddin Rabbani, was Pakistani. In a statement, they said the murder was plotted in the Pakistani city of Quetta. Yesterday, President Karzai said that he was abandoning attempts to negotiate with the Taliban and would instead directly deal with Pakistan. Britain and France have extended their travel warnings for people visiting Kenya, with the Foreign Office advising against all but essential travel to a stretch of Kenya's coast. Yesterday, a French woman was kidnapped near the border with Somalia, 3 weeks after a British woman was seized and her husband murdered. West Yorkshire police have arrested a 37-year-old man following a fatal fire in Ragby. 2-year-old Isabel Dobson died in the fire on Friday evening. Police in Lancashire are investigating the death of a baby whose body was found by a dog walker. The baby, thought to have been about 2 months old, was found in a culvert in Kirkham. The weather, it will remain warm and sunny in the Midlands and southern England throughout the afternoon. It will be cooler and cloudier elsewhere with outbreaks of rain. The BBC News and Weather at 2:30 past one.
Read by Vaughan Savage. I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. In an hour's time at 2 o'clock in our Sunday concert, we'll be hearing a performance of Schubert's song cycle Winterreise, performed by the baritone Christian Gerhaher and the pianist Gerald Huber. That's followed at 4 o'clock by Choral Evensong from Winchester Cathedral for the eve of the Feast of St Michael and All Angels. It's sung by the cathedral choirs of Chichester, Salisbury and Winchester. But now it's time for today's early music show. Here's Lucy Skeeping.
Today's programme begins in a rather uncomfortable environment, a prison in The Hague. It was October 1593, and languishing in solitary confinement was a tall, dark-haired, respectable-looking foreigner, an Englishman in his early 30s called Peter Phillips. He was a composer, he argued vehemently to the authorities, not a Catholic spy, and certainly not involved in any plot to kill Queen Elizabeth. What's more, he insisted, he'd only stopped off in Middleburg because he was taken ill and, as he put it, to converse with such as delighted in music. So just how did Peter Phillips, one of the great composers of the Tudor age, end up being incarcerated like this and fearing for his life? Well, on today's programme, we're going to explore the events that led up to this moment. But first, let's hear some music. Two keyboard pieces with rather gloomy titles, thought to have been written from his prison cell, Pavana and Galliarda Dolorosa.
Thank you.
Harpsichordist Annika Autenboss with Pavane and Galliard Dolorosa by Peter Phillips, thought to have been composed while he was imprisoned in The Hague, accused of being part of a plot to murder Queen Elizabeth. In today's Early Music Show, to mark the 450th anniversary of Phillips's birth, we're going to be tracing his life and the events that led up to his imprisonment. And we'll be hearing examples of his considerable output of church music, madrigals and keyboard pieces along the way. But let's go back in time a bit. Although Phillips is relatively neglected these days, he was, after William Byrd, the most published English composer of the Elizabethan Jacobean age. It's thought he was born in 1561, which makes him a contemporary of Shakespeare, and probably in London, where he trained as a choir boy at St Paul's Cathedral. The choirmaster at the time was Sebastian Westcott, a man whose stubborn attachment to the outlawed Catholic faith was well known and who was frequently in trouble with the authorities because of it. Recognising Phillips's special talent, Westcott arranged for him to study with the great William Byrd, gentleman of the Chapel Royal. Byrd, of course, was also a Catholic, although somehow by lying low, he had managed to negotiate the political religious minefield of the times rather deftly. Nevertheless, he'd taken the risk of dedicating his collections of sacred songs, the Canciones Sacrae, to English Catholic noblemen. They're dark, foreboding and austere pieces, and if one were to look hard enough, perhaps a hidden agenda, Byrd's own personal Catholic message, could be interpreted in every one of them. O Lord, come quickly and dissolve the bonds of our captivity.
Thank you.
Domine presto l'amor, a motet by William Byrd from his Canciones Sacrae of 1589, the Cardinal's music directed there by Andrew Carwood. Shortly after Westcott's death, his fledgling pupil, Peter Phillips, fled England for good, pour la foi catholique, as the immigration document tells us, in other words, for his Catholic faith. His first stop was Douai, now in northern France, where he was sheltered by the English expat Catholic community. But his destination was Italy, and after a grueling 2 months on the road, he finally arrived in Rome to be received at the English College. This had originally been a hospice for pilgrims, but by the time Phillips turned up, it had become a sanctuary for religious exiles. Not that its residents were what you might call saintly men by any means. In fact, according to one writer, many of them devoted far too much of their time to drinking, gambling, quarrelling and associating with dubious female company. And if that wasn't enough of a shock for young Phillips, the music scene in Rome must have been pretty astonishing too. Here he heard madrigals, a relatively new genre to him, and polychorality, where several choirs would respond to each other across a huge cathedral space, not to mention the seductive pleasures of monody and harmony with all the amazing vocal and instrumental virtuosity that went with them. These were styles that would influence Peter Phillips for the rest of his life, and as organist at the college, he came into contact with some of the great Italian masters, often using their music as the basis for his own compositions. We're going to hear Phillips's harpsichord intabulation, his arrangement, if you like, of Chi fara fede al cielo, a madrigal by the Italian composer Alessandro Striccio.
Thank you.
Harpsichordist Siegbert Rampe with a piece by Peter Phillips, his harpsichord intabulation of a vocal work by Strigio. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and today we're exploring the life and music of Peter Phillips, the English composer who in 1593 was imprisoned in The Hague, accused of being part of a plot to kill Queen Elizabeth. So where have we got up to? Well, as we've heard, Phillips, a Catholic, fled England and settled at the English College in Rome. He'd been there for some 3 years when a nobleman arrived to join the community. Lord Thomas Paget was another refugee from England, a serious political agitator whose association with prominent Catholics, including some of the men who would later plan the gunpowder plot, had already got him into deep trouble. He invited Phillips to join him. And for the next 5 years, they travelled all over Europe together. They eventually settled in Brussels, where Paget died. And the sombre pieces we'll hear now may well have been Phillips's musical tribute to the memory of his noble patron. This is Pavan and Galliard Paget. Paul Nicholson is the harpsichordist.
Thank you.
Paul Nicholson performing The Paget, Pavan and Galliard by Peter Phillips, written around 1590. Perfectly reasonably, for many years, most people have assumed that the Paget of the title was Phillips's travelling companion, Lord Thomas Paget. However, another manuscript of the same piece has recently come to light, with the name Sir Charles Paget at the top. Hang on, Charles was Thomas's brother. But where does he fit into the story then? Well, all will be revealed, but first we've got some catching up to do because Peter Phillips was on the move again to Antwerp, where he found himself a wife and earned his living as a teacher of the virginals. The Low Countries at this time were a welcome haven for Englishmen like him who'd fled their native land for religious reasons. Here, Catholics and Protestants could mingle freely, and Phillips now felt able to consolidate some of his musical output. His first publication, Melodia Olympia, was an anthology of madrigals sung by the Italian composers like Marenzio and Palestrina, whom he'd so much admired, and four of them his own. We're going to hear one of those in this next set. A rather mournful love song whose word painting and use of instrumental accompaniment show just how Phillips was moving closer and closer to the Italian style. Before that, though, a piece by another composer who was to be so influential. In 1593, Phillips visited Amsterdam, as he put it, to see and hear an excellent man of his faculties. He was almost certainly referring to Jan Pieterszoon Sweelinck, famous organist at the city's Oude Kerk. Although primarily famous for his keyboard works, Sweelinck was also a skilled composer for voices and was in fact the only northern Netherlander to compose French chansons. So this is Sweelinck's Plus tu connais. The more you know how I burn for you, the more you hate me, O cruel one. Plus tu connais, je prie, plus tu connais, plus tu connais, je prie, 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 plus tu connais, je prie A madrigal from Peter Phillips' first collection, performed there by Capella Mediterranea, directed by Leonardo Garcia Alacon. And before that, the Amsterdam Gesualdo Consort performed Sphalanx's Plutus Cognet. Within a few months, Phillips was ready to leave Amsterdam. It would be a long journey home, and he appears to have become unwell and stopped off at the Dutch port of Middelburg to recuperate. I say appears to have become unwell because this was how he accounted for himself when he was suddenly and dramatically arrested by the authorities. Was this apparently humble musician really a spy then? And had Elizabeth's men finally caught up with him? Well, it's all rather complicated, but it does appear now that Peter Phillips may not have been quite what he seemed. The point is, it wasn't unusual for musicians at this time to be recruited into intelligence operations, the Elizabethan Secret Service, if you like. And Phillips, now a widower, fluent in several languages and in close contact with expat Catholics, would have been a natural candidate to act as a double agent on behalf of the English government. In fact, it's now been strongly suggested that when he stopped off in Middelburg, he was actually on a mission to deliver secret letters that contained evidence of a plot to kill Queen Elizabeth. What's more, his old patron Lord Paget and his brother Charles were in it up to their necks as well, especially Charles, who's long been proved to have been a double agent, working both for the English crown and also plotting against it. So was Phillips also involved in all this, like some Tudor James Bond, or was it purely his association with the Pagets which led to his arrest? In prison, in spite of several gruelling interrogation sessions, he was absolutely adamant that he knew nothing about politics or about the Paget brothers at all. But I'm convinced that all the facts point towards him being a double agent because within a few weeks, a mysterious letter from someone high up in the English government was hastily dispatched to Holland and it ordered Phillips to be released immediately. It certainly does seem, doesn't it, that someone close to Queen Elizabeth was looking out for him.
Thank you.
Ave Jesu Christe, a motet for eight voices by Peter Phillips. Well, now a free man again, Phillips was admitted to the household of the Archduke Albrecht of Austria as one of the organists of the court chapel. He remained there for the rest of his life, concentrating mainly on religious music, the most important of which were the 69 Canciones Sacrae, the sacred songs. And it seems that despite his shady political past, Phillips's dedication to Catholicism was as strong as ever, for he declared that these motets were for the confirmation and amplification of the Catholic, Apostolic and Roman faith, and the extirpation and confusion of heresy and heretics. St. Paul the Apostle, preacher of the truth to the whole world, a motet from Peter Phillips's Canciones Sacrae, published in 1612, and that was the choir of Trinity College, Cambridge, directed by Richard Marlowe. Phillips undoubtedly stands, with William Byrd, amongst the greatest composers of the Counter-Reformation. Both were English Catholic recusants, and yet, while Byrd remained in England, Phillips chose to live on the continent. But perhaps it was this very exile that made his music so special. He amalgamated English, Spanish and Italian styles, and he moved away from the old austerity of English polyphony towards an emotional intensity and colour that personified the Baroque. And one also senses a rebellious streak in his music as well, a religious fervour that was its driving force. Let's end today with another motet from the Canciones Sacrae collection, again performed by the choir of Trinity College, Cambridge. A rather appropriate text for Phillips, this one. Ne reminiscaris Domine, remember not, Lord, our offences.
The choir of Trinity College, Cambridge, conducted by Richard Marlowe in Ne Reminiscaris Domine by Peter Phillips. And that ends today's Early Music Show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Sam Phillips. And now, every week, you can download edited highlights from the Early Music Show via the Radio 3 website, and more details are online. Well, there's more choral music in Choral Evensong, another chance to hear the service from Winchester Cathedral, recorded during the Southern Cathedrals Festival for the eve of the Feast of St Michael and All Angels. The choirs are the Cathedral Choirs of Chichester, Salisbury and Winchester, and we'll be hearing music by Charles Wood, Barry Rose, Charles Villiers Stanford, Herbert Howells and Liszt. And that all starts at 4 o'clock. But now, at 2 o'clock, it's time for our Sunday Concert, a recital recorded recently here in London and presented by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Wigmore Hall, where baritone Christian Gerhaer and pianist Gerald Huber are about to take us on Schubert's Winter Journey, his song cycle Winterreise. The cycle of 24 songs was composed in 1827, the year before Schubert's death at the age of just 31, and 4 years after the publication of his song cycle about a young apprentice's unrequited and obsessive love for a miller's daughter, Die schöne Müllerin. The poet of Winterreise is once again Wilhelm Müller, and once again Schubert drew on Müller's Waldhornisten poems, or to give them their full, earnestly literal title, 77 poems from the posthumous papers of a travelling horn player. Schubert had discovered Müller's work at a turning point in his own life, when carefree youth was being subsumed into the illness that would kill him, and the morbid fatalism of these poems had a great appeal. The eternal wanderer, always an outsider looking in, is a key figure in romantic literature, and Winterreise's protagonist is a man travelling alone and despondent, away from all he once held dear. From the opening lines of the first song, Gute Nacht, the reason for this exile becomes clear. A stranger I came, a stranger I depart. Back in May, the girl spoke of love, her mother even of marriage. And now the world's so bleak, the road concealed in snow. And although this winter journey is waymarked with brief lyrical flashbacks, the mood is always spare, unforgiving, until the final eerie encounter with the old hurdy-gurdy man, to whom no one else is listening. How does Christian Gerhaer see the inner landscape of these songs?
The Winterreise is, I think, often misinterpreted as a cycle which is leading a protagonist to his death. But I think the truth is it has remarkable correlations with a special period of the poet's life, of Wilhelm Müller. He was a young student when he left to Brussels as a soldier against Napoleon. And, well, he met a young lady. She was married to a trader. And they fell in love. And then, immediately after the detection of their relationship, he had to leave the army. And he walked back to Berlin in winter time, from Brussels to Berlin. It's quite a long trip, but I think this is the situation. He was kicked out, not only from the house, but also from his love, but especially also from the army. And what I wanted to say is the story of the protagonist of the Winterreise is not about death, it's not about a decreasing will of life. It's the opposite. It's a crisis, a hard and deep crisis of a very, very ambitious man who has to overcome this deep fall and to get onto his ambitious road again.
And coming onto the Wigmore Hall platform now, Christian Gerhaer and Gerald Huber to perform the 24 songs of Schubert's Winterreise.
Fremd bin ich auch. Mädchen sprach von Liebe, die Mutter gar von ihm. Das Mädchen sprach von Liebe, die Mutter gar von ihm. Nun ist die Welt so trübe, der Weg hüllt in Schnee. Nun ist die Welt so trübe, der Weg hüllt in Schnee. Ich kann zu meiner Reise nicht wehre mit der Zeit, muss selbst den Weg mir weisen in dieser Dunkelheit. Es zieht ein Mondenschatten als mein Gefährte mit. Es zieht ein Mondenschatten als ein Gefährte mit. Und auf den weißen Matten such ich des Wildes Tritt. Und auf den weißen Matten such ich des Wildes Tritt. Was soll ich länger weinen, dass man mich trieb hinaus? Lass ihre Hunde heulen vor ihres Herren aus. Die Liebe liebt das Wandern, Gott hat sie so. Zu dem anderen, Gott hat sie so gemacht. Die Liebe liebt das Wandern, fein Liebchen, gute Nacht. Von einem zu dem anderen, fein Liebchen, gute Nacht. Will ich im Traum nicht stören, wer schaut um deine Sollst meinen Tritt nicht hören, sacht, sacht die Türe zu. Schreib ihm vorübergehen, Angst vor dir, gute Nacht, damit du mögest ziehen.